The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Answerable Questions with Questionable Answers, the show in which we try and answer some of life's meaningful and meaningless questions. My name is Marcus. Sarah's over there.
I'm here.
And Chris is over there.
Hey.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, hope can be defined as a feeling of expectation and desire for a particular thing to happen. Now, look, 2020 has been a bad year, there's no doubt about that. But whether we're struggling through a pandemic or not, there are always hardships going on around the world, whether extreme or relative. Today, we are answering the question, what gives you hope, Sarah?
Well, obviously, apart from Jesus, you know, that massive thing that defines my life and all that. I would say when things are tough, something which I hold on to is I try to practice gratitude. Yeah. So, and it was interesting, actually, I did put a call out and then Joe Walsh agreed with me on this one. So thanks, Joe.
Go on, Walshy.
It's the thing of trying to kind of find things to be grateful for, even when it feels like everything's falling apart. And sometimes that might literally be something like, oh, well, I had a nice sandwich today. It sounds silly. It sounds trivial. But actually, if you do it regularly, there have literally been studies into this of how it's really good for your mental health, of just trying to focus on little positives. Mm-hmm. Can actually really help. And honestly, I would recommend to anyone, if you think this day has just been the worst day of my life, nothing has gone right, oh my goodness, there will be one tiny thing, even if it was a great sandwich. And a great sandwich, got to be honest, very high on my list of things that make my day good.
I've just rediscovered a toasted cheese sandwich, by the way.
Oh,
and I haven't
yes.
had one for about 25 years. How amazing are they?
Well, you're not having any ham in it, it's just cheese.
I did put a bit of mustard in it.
Ooh. Oh, scumbag.
I need a little bit.
Sarah, what have you done today then? What little things have you done today that brought out the gratitude? And essentially you're talking about being content.
contempt.
Let's
contempt
be clear on
thought.
That. Yeah, we don't want any of that here. You're just sort of about contentmentship, the word I've just invented. Practice contentmentship.
Grateful for Marcus's new library of words.
Yeah, you're grateful that you've got a good vocab, for example.
Always. Today, what have I... Today, also food related, my mum has made some amazing Bakewell slices and I had a little break from work with a cup of tea. Bakewell slice, 15 minutes. Oh, yeah. It was a beautiful...
Big slice.
Yeah.
Bakewell with Bakewell.
Amen to that, brother.
Yes, okay.
Grateful for Marcus's puns.
Marvellous.
Puns, not buns.
Indeed. yeah. But we're grateful for my buns, certainly. Anything else, Sarah, that other than the Bakewell slices, which are high on anybody's list, if you're aware of a Bakewell slice, or tart, for that matter.
Indeed.
They do come in tart form.
So you threw me with the various forms of Bakewell, to be honest.
The tart chat.
I honestly, like, so I know some people actually do keep a little diary of stuff, but I don't. Maybe that'll be a New Year's resolution for next year. But I would honestly say something like, you know, getting to see you guys who, you know, I haven't seen you in person in a while, getting to have a good chat, hopefully recording a nice podcast. Mm-hmm. Massively grateful for that.
So finding the little nuggets in life, you know, that kind
finding
of thing.
The little things. And Joe, who got in touch, put it quite well himself. He said, it just reminds me that it's not all bad, which sometimes mm-hmm. when you're struggling, I do think it's that simple of it's not all bad.
It's not.
So
all
do you think
bad.
We get into like a spiral of kind of feeling more hopeless than it really is, and that breaks the spell, so to speak, of our hopelessness
massively? Yeah, because I think it can feel like, And don't get me wrong, sometimes really, really bad stuff does happen, and I'm not, this isn't about diminishing
stuff, of course, but it is
about just saying, look, not everything is awful. The world is not completely against you. There are still little things that can make, just make things feel a bit less hopeless. And I quite liked it as well. Simon Beale, who's our resident historian, he also got in touch.
Oh, I love a bit of Beale.
We love Beale. He said something really nice. He said it can be a range of things. Could be a favourite song, a film, a book. And I never thought I would say it, but having a pet has massively helped. In the darkest times of lockdown, seeing our pair of cats dash about the place and get up to mischief is amazing at levelling things. So while, you know, the cats aren't going to solve the pandemic, I really like that of, like, you know, just focusing on that little moment of joy.
Mm. Well, the minks definitely won't solve the pandemic. Oh,
yeah,
that,
yeah, no.
Yeah. Well, they're not pets, though, Chris, are they? What about you, Chris?
Not anymore. They're all dead.
Yeah. What gives you hope?
Elon Musk and escaping to outer space.
Now you're
rockets.
Talking. Yeah. When he's gone, there'll be a lot more
Elon.
Hope about.
I don't know. Like, partly, you know, like Sarah, apart from the whole God thing. I would say
being a training vicar and all.
Yeah, exactly.
Chris's latest sermon. Oh God, yeah, all that, yeah.
Yeah, moving on. I guess things like science usually give us a lot of hope, don't they? That as we are in a pandemic, there's hope for the vaccine and there's hope that things will change. Mm-hmm. So science is a big one that, again, if you think about how humanity has just bounded forward over the last 100 years, mm-hmm. kind of the children not dying at birth or mothers and things like that. Like, there's real hope for the future,
yeah.
In our own capacity as a species. Mm-hmm. So I definitely think things like hope, and actually I would say attached to that would be our wonderful doctors and nurses in the NHS, people like that. Actually, if you've been given bad news, that there's hope that these guys can help as well. So I guess in humanity, mm-hmm. In our capacity to change and evolve and move things forward, that definitely gives me some hope. Yeah, I mean, we could go on, but that, yeah. I also do agree with Beale. I had written down music that changes my mood. But then that I can start to feel more hopeful after I've listened to something either nostalgic or upbeat. Yeah. You were singing some good old upbeat 90s songs earlier, Marcus. You know, that gave me hope. It broke the cloud around me.
Yeah,
so, yeah,
I mean, there's a hidden message in there, as there was in the song, although they didn't hide it that well. You're talking about me singing Ebenezer Good, for yes. those who know. Yeah, you're really sort of...
A classic hymn.
Yeah, so you... you're a real. You're not a classic sort of soon-to-be vicar, are you? Sort of parking God and then talking about a band called The Shaman singing yeah. about illegal drugs. But, you know, hope springs eternal, I suppose. Sarah, you've mentioned a few of our good listeners there who got involved on our Instagram feed, I'm assuming, because you put out a marvellous message.
Yeah.
And our good listeners responded, didn't they?
Honestly, we had so many lovely responses. It was really brilliant. So thank you to everyone who did send something in. I can tell you a few of them, which I thought were really nice. We had a couple of people, Tim Bevan and Mark Ogden, both said family. Mark said, nice. Knowing family is always there, a phone call is all it takes, which I thought was really nice, because I think sometimes when things are hopeless, you can feel quite alone. And like Chris was saying, you're trapped in that sort of spiral of feeling hopeless, and actually sometimes it does just take, you know, it can be family, it can be a friend, of just picking up the phone or sending a text or something.
Yeah,
I thought that was really nice. And I guess, you know, I know some people say that, you know, when things are hard, their children or you know, younger family members, they often find very encouraging, because, you know, they're still having fun, they still know how to kind of be cheerful and all that kind of thing. So that is quite nice. One that I loved, Blair Jackson said in helping others, to feel like I can make a difference makes the problem seem surmountable.
Yeah,
I think that's a big one. I think old BJ's stumbled on something. Well, not stumbled, but he's tapped into something there.
I found an article before about 9 types of hopelessness. Now, I'm not going to go into them because this show is about hope. But actually, it did say acts of kindness is a really good way of breaking ourselves out of feeling hopeless. Actually, engaging with other people, yep. that kind of feeling of giving out and loving people and things like that. And I think we did do a show in the past, didn't we, about acts of kindness?
Yeah.
And it actually does make a big difference to our own emotion, and we do start to feel a bit more helpful.
I think you're absolutely right, Chris. I think it's funny actually, because last Sunday's sermon at Sarah My Church was all about it was all about giving, actually. Financially, specifically. Don't worry, it's not one of those, you know, those sort of cheesy kind of, hey, dial 1-800, all your money, and, you know.
Vicar needs a new disco ball suit.
Yeah, we don't really.
To be fair, we probably could do with one of those, but, you know.
Yeah. It was the swimming pool in the background that sort of put me. We don't really have that so much here. But no, it wasn't, not that sort of crappy nonsense. But it was all about giving, and our marvellous Vicar John made a good point about how when you kind of give a bit of money, and then especially if you hear where the money's gone and what's happened and how it's kind of helped someone or blessed someone, it's actually who receives more of the blessing, if you see what I mean. It's actually the giver. It is. I know it's a very cheesy and it's very cliche and a bit Miss Worldy, but it is. There is something in that, though, isn't there? And I think there's a nice thing. Sorry, Chris. What some charities do is say, well, if you give this amount, this is where it will go. And I think people quite like that as well.
Yeah. I was going to say, what people often say then is there's no selfless act. I actually disagree. I think we're made to be in community and to help each other. Therefore, we're happiest most when we are most ourselves.
Yes.
And I think, and so therefore, I do think that that's why it makes sense that doing good things for other people is almost, we are becoming who we were designed to be, in my opinion, as well. That's why it makes loads of sense to give and to do things. And we are happier.
Yeah.
So actually, some of the best times I've had when I've been feeling down myself is in volunteering and helping other people. And again, at your church, not to give it too much promo, but it's they often do meals for street sleepers and for the homeless and stuff like that. And actually going to serve at those places. And it's not just, I don't think I ever had a thought of like, oh, at least my life's not, you know, at least I've got a house type thing.
No, it's not
it's
comparison.
Just something in engaging with other people, which and being able to help them feels incredible, and actually does, again, as I said before, break the spell.
Yeah, I think you'd be doing it wrong, Chris, if you want to live in community and you turn up and go, oh, look at the state of this lot. At least I'm not like that. You know, that is wrong. You shouldn't be doing that. But let's be clear. But I think that would be my answer is community. And it's very just sort of generic. And ultimately, what people are saying, you know, in terms of, you know, acts of kindness and blah, blah, blah. I suppose I'm just using a bigger blanket term. But there is that thing when you're truly kind of living in some sort of community. When you know your neighbours, for example, or when you know, in a city like London, it can be a little bit tricky with that. But there are acts of being communal as well. So, I don't know, like... if you're at the football or you're at a music gig or something and the whole crowd, and I understand obviously at the moment there are no crowds, blah blah blah, but when you're all kind of as one or you're all singing or you're all like the World Cup, we go back 2 years when England were doing well, Chris, at the World Cup, and that kind of, we were in the pub for the quarterfinal win against Sweden.
Marvellous.
It is absolutely just, if you could bottle that and sell it, you'd be a billionaire by the end of the weekend, you know.
Even the memory of it is making me smile.
Exactly. And and it's that kind of living in that sort of those moments. The community is, of course, the has much more longevity. But those punchy moments as well. Like there was a thing I was watching the other day where there was this group of people, and they were, it was a live, it was a gig sort of a live video of musical artist, and the crowd were all just like singing and chanting, and I remember thinking to myself, that's all I want from life, is to be in a crowd like that. That's all I want.
There's something powerful about singing.
Absolutely. Communal singing, again, why we do it on a Sunday or wherever your church is, you know, like it's absolutely marvellous. Anyone else, Sarah, by the way?
Oh, yeah. Well, we had... Oh, it was all sorts. Oh, one that I loved. They just went by the username, Dancing Between the Lines. I thought this was quite an interesting one. Mm-hmm. I find hope through views from high places, like skylines, hilltops, etc. It's great for getting perspective and feeling calm outside of the chaos from below.
I like that.
I thought that was great. And you know what? Actually, it's interesting. Again, not to go back too much into the old God thing, but I have definitely found nature as kind of like, as she said there, is that thing of kind of grounding yourself and going, well, I'm part of something bigger.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not just me and my problems and my, you know, my little hopeless cycle. Just for that bit of perspective, I thought that was
Do you think there's
brilliant.
An element of, there's an element of humility? I know the word humble and humility is grossly overused and misused. But I remember the Right Honourable Billy Connolly when he was doing a tour of Australia, and he said he went to some places and he said, you know, there were just tracks and tracks of land for miles and miles and miles as far as the eye could see. And he said, I think it's really good for you to see expanses and big, you know, things because it makes you feel small. And you don't want to turn it into a sort of a negative. It makes me feel crap. I'm just nothing. I'm a speck on the horizon. You don't want to go down that road. But there is something, Sarah, about that kind of bigger picture, something else going on. Which, of course, a great view, being up high, that kind of thing, that feeds into that.
Yeah.
I think also on that type of thing about feeling, I believe we're all significant. I'll put that out there now. But I also think that there's something about that reminding ourselves that we're not the most significant thing that there's
You're
ever
as
been.
Significant as the next person.
Yes. But also, as you said, that kind of perspective by seeing whether it be a horizon or the sea or a mountain or whatever. But I think also, like, I was thinking history actually helps as well, because you realize that mankind has been through horrific things in the past and got through it. And, you know, I would argue that, you know, we're better for when we've come through things as well. It hones and it refines. So actually looking back at history does help as well, I think. That, again, because I'll be gone in whatever, if I'm lucky, 50, I've got another 50 years left.
Yeah.
But actually, creation and the world and humanity will carry on. So, like, I actually find hope by looking back at history.
I agree, actually. I think looking at those who have come before us, and yes, the mistakes that have been made, but the incredible victories, I find, like, you know, like feats of engineering or beautiful architecture, something like that. You know, it's incredible what people have done. And it's true, like, it is just that, you know, any historian worth their salt, and I'm sure our man Simon Beale would be.
Oh, he's getting a few mentions.
Well, do you know what? I don't want to put words in his mouth, because he might think this is utter tosh.
Go on, do it.
But a historian I used to work with said that, you know, this idea that, you know, it's not just his words, a lot of people say, this idea that humanity is getting worse and worse and worse is nonsense, and this idea that humanity is getting better and better and better is not quite accurate as well. Quite clearly there are things that are improving and things that are really having an impact on, you know, absolute poverty, the situation there being improved, and sanitization and whatnot. And my goodness, you know, Bill Gates is trying his best in certain areas as well. But actually, really, when you look at humanity, it's probably a little bit more accurate to say it is that just sort of drunk staggering around in a circle, that some things improve, some things not. You know, you're not going to get everything right. And actually, I find a bit of hope in that, because I think one can try and find too much hope in certain things, and then you realise, actually, that was a bit of a fool's errand. Take politics, you know, pretty hot topic at the moment. Do you get hope in Joe Biden? Well, I think a lot of people probably, a lot of people got hope in Donald Trump because of his, you know, you can't ignore that. They have the millions and millions of votes would back that up. Now, whatever one may think of that, quite clearly they do. Some people get hope in Trump not being there. Some people will get hope in Joe Biden. In this country, and perhaps it's safer territory to talk about something in your own country, how much hope? Chris, you will probably remember. Sarah, you're perhaps too young, but you will have certainly be aware of the recent political history. So much hope in Tony Blair when he came in. So much hope. And then what happens years later, a lot of people are left with a bit of a sour taste in their mouth. And actually, he's quite an unpopular figure with a lot of people. Again, rightly or wrongly, I'm not getting into that. So sometimes one has to almost be careful where you don't want to pile in too much hope into something, if you see what I mean, because
you
can end up, you know, with Tony Blair shaped egg all over your face.
Don't want that.
I will never put as much faith in Tony Blair as God. How about that?
Good old tone.
You're right. I think that's the thing, isn't it, with politics.
Or Boris Johnson is this hope. Over your face. Sorry, carry on.
Yeah. That sounds awful. There is hope that you know that a kind of almost a hero will emerge and rescue us from these things as well. And
definitely.
I think that's what we often think with politicians. And you know, I'm not gonna kind of say either way, but I think when Trump came in, he was essentially perceived potentially as a change candidate because he wasn't a politician.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It was like, you know, and for good or for ill, you know, there was no change really. But the point is that I think there was hope that something different would emerge.
Yeah.
And that was the message Obama got, wasn't it, about change. Actually, there is when things feel darkest, there's hope for change. And, you know, often I think we can find hope in a lot of these places. Well, but you're right, Marcus, in the 90s, the wave of optimism across the UK with New Labour coming in and all that
To kind of sort of, I suppose, almost like summarise that what I was trying to say about mind how you go, where you put your hope, there was that absolutely incredible, for various reasons, Spike Lee quote. Obviously, Spike Lee, filmmaker, has done some great stuff, very, very politically active as well. And very vocal on particular topics. He said, when Obama got in, he said, Obama getting in changes everything. We will look at time in sort of pre-Obama and post-Obama kind of time. Careful, though, because you're getting into sort of BC and AD kind of chat there. And he said, Obama changes everything. That's how we will look at time. And it's like, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then Donald Trump got in. Like, what do you think of those comments now? And, you know, that this is what I mean. Where are you finding hope? You know, are you projecting too much on something which actually is a potential house of cards?
Yeah. I guess he might not be wrong on that in terms of, you know, there's a lot of... Was Obama that kind of... Did that then create an atmosphere where Trump would get in, type thing? Like, we just don't know. I don't think we'll know for a long time.
Absolutely right.
And so, as you said, actually, it could be right there. Actually, there's a seismic shift that happened then.
Yeah.
As I said, I don't think we'll know for good or for ill for a while yet.
Yeah, but I think it is interesting, you know, looking at hope. People have done a lot of studies on why hope is important. And, you know, just a few bullet points you can find easily on so many different kind of websites and publications that it motivates positive actions. And I think that's, you know, when I defined hope at the start, it's a feeling of expectation and desire for a particular thing to happen. There's something big with hope. There was a study done by Magaletta and Oliver, who said that they measured hope, self-efficacy and optimism. Now, I kind of put optimism and hope kind of in the same, and they are kind of in the same bracket, but there's a subtle difference. Yeah, so as I say, hope is that kind of sort of desire and expectation for something to happen, which often prompts action as well. Whereas optimism is hopefulness and confidence about the future or the success of something. So it's almost like a prediction, I suppose. Kind of optimistic about something, not hugely different to hope, of course, but there are subtle differences. And then efficacy is, of course, the ability to produce a desired or intended result. And and their study showed that with hope, self-efficacy and optimism, hope stood head and shoulders above the others in importance of in terms of results, in terms of going about doing something. And I thought that was quite fascinating. It wasn't, it's almost as important as the ability to be able to do a task or something like that. Because you can get the most talented person in the world, but without hope, they're done for almost, if you see what I mean.
Yeah. Well, you just think, what's the point, don't you?
Yeah, exactly.
That's what you end up doing. Like, if there's no hope for it or change or it, or whatever you're trying and working, you just think there's no point. Well, I would anyway, because I'm lazy.
Well,
the
studies
show... Yeah, sorry, Sarah.
Well, I wonder if, you know, Marcus, this is probably more your area than mine, but it makes me think about, and, you know, over the years. I'm sure you've seen this in a lot of things like football games. I've certainly seen it when I've been supporting Wales in the rugby. They seem to lose hope and then they just kind of stop trying.
Yeah.
If you, so it's,
or they're paralysed by fear sometimes.
Yeah, but it kind of,
you see it when a great comeback, when a team suddenly gathers momentum and the other team go, oh no, and they lose hope.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's palpable.
Yeah. It can really affect the performance, and it's not, you know, nothing has actually changed physically, or, you know, the tactics are still the same, or whatever it is, but just mentally, when you start to lose hope, everything else starts to crumble.
Completely. Yeah.
It's like, I guess it's like momentum, isn't it? Like, if you get hope, you can actually gather momentum and a head of steam. Mm. And especially in that sort of sporting context. As you said, Marcus, like, your team might be 3-0 up. If the other team gets one goal, all of a sudden they get momentum and hope, and it really starts to kind of bulldoze through whatever is in front of them.
Yeah, and in a sporting context, you want to, you know, if you see the others getting hope, you want to snuff out their hope because you see how important that is to them. But you know, on a kind of more sort of day-to-day thing, that's why at the moment in particular with the pandemic and so on, and that's possibly why in the US election, again without getting political too much, maybe that's why so many more people were engaged, because people are crying out for some sort of hope. Could be the divisiveness of certain people involved, but it is fascinating. But there was another study, in fact a lot of studies have shown that hope is related to positive outcomes. A study on secondary school pupils showed that those who were categorised as more hopeful got better grades and were far less likely to fail exams and even get expelled from school.
Wow.
It's absolutely incredible. And you can think to yourself, well, this makes sense. This does make sense. Because if you see someone miserable who has no hope, the hope's got, or their, you know, self-fulfilling prophecy has got the better of them in a negative way and blah, 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 blah. You think to yourself, well, yeah, but so if we know all these things in the day-to-day, especially during a pandemic where we're not getting perhaps hope from some of the avenues, where are you getting it from? It's important to exercise that and to find little ways, as we've said. Another one that I find incredible among, you know, what brings people hope, you know, and you, as you say, nature, seeing children kind of be joyous, you know, because there's a sort of purity, isn't there, sometimes, you know, when you see that. They've not been bogged down by, you know, life and whatnot, and experiencing sort of culture and creativity and innovation, blah, blah, blah. Defiance in the face of persecution and evil can be, you know, perhaps one of the ultimate sources of hope.
Courage.
I remember reading not that long ago about a guy who's been dubbed the Vicar of Baghdad. Who? He's an absolute nutter. I've met him. He's crazy.
Have you?
He spoke at a previous church of mine in Hammersmith, in West London, and an extraordinary character.
Very dry sense of humour, right?
But has to, you know, considering the things that he's seen and done, and that is that kind of. As I say, that sort of defiance in the face of persecution and evil. I mean, there's that film Defiance with Daniel Craig playing those Jewish brothers in, I forget which part of Eastern Europe, it could be Lithuania, forgive me if that's wrong, or Belarus maybe, you know, during Second World War and whatnot. And they clinging to that hope essentially kind of kept them alive, you know. And I would have thought that the vast majority, certainly people, at least not, if not all, listening to this podcast and ourselves will never experience that kind of extreme, you know, one would hope not. But still though, the relative struggles that we face, you know, it is important to keep the old hope topped up, Sarah. Do we have any more from our good listeners?
We do, yeah. I've just got a few more to leave you with. One, it was interesting, we were talking about looking back at history. This is more about kind of your personal history. Paul Staveley said, "I know my record for surviving bad days is 100% so far. There's no reason why I can't survive
that's a
this.
Point.
I
love
thought
that. Well put.
That was really great. And he said, you know, I know it's a bit Hallmark card, but he was saying, oh, I work with teenagers who struggle with their mental health quite a lot. And that little quote actually does seem to help. And I know personally, like, I definitely think that, you know, when I've been through, you know, I had some really bad times last year, personally, and I definitely thought, well, I've made it through every day so far, I can make it through this day. And I think we talked on another podcast quite recently about just taking things day by day, go, well, I can do another day. I've done this many. I can do another one. And if you keep going with that, then you kind of, you know, you can hold on to some hope. And then the final two to share with you, one from a good friend of mine, Iona Rowland. She finds hope in the music of Whitney Houston.
Well, very I think important. We all do to an extent.
Yeah.
And our wonderful James Cox, who does our graphics, says he finds hope
Coxie.
In us.
Ah, Coxie.
We love you, Coxie. We love you.
Coxie does.
Hold Coxie in your thoughts and prayers, everybody. He's got a bad knee.
Oh, no.
He's suffering. Yeah. I was thinking when you were saying, Sarah, about, you know, we get through every day, there's also the hope that, you know, you're a winner. You've won at least one race.
Ooh, have I?
The sperm race.
Exactly. Oh, my goodness. I was not expecting that.
I haven't heard that for a while.
You're all winners, ladies and gentlemen.
I think that's a great note to end on. But I would say to our brother-in-arms, old Cox, James Coxey, mind what I said about putting your hope too much, going in too heavy on foolish things if your hope's in us. But there we are. Marvellous. Well, thank you very much for getting involved. We really appreciated all your comments in there. It certainly makes the show a little bit more, I was going to say spicy. I probably should...
Rich.
Rich is the word, yes. Rich is the word. More flavoursome, you could say. So thank you very much. Sarah, where can the good people get involved with that kind of stuff?
Well, I would usually put a call out on Instagram. So if you've got that, follow us there. We're at AQQAPod, and we are the same on Twitter as well. So make sure you follow us.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. Give us a lovely review on iTunes as
only
well.
It does five.
Yeah.
Only five.
Only no, lovely, less than that. Lovely reviews.
If you hated the show, you probably haven't got this far. But if you have, sorry about that. good luck to you. Yeah. And I hope we haven't hampered your hope too much. But if we have given you a bit of hope, or you've enjoyed the show, then do head over to iTunes. Give us a lovely review because it does help. So there we are. But until next week, good people, thank you very much, Sarah.
Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chris.
Merci beaucoup.
Thank you, good listeners. See you.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.